We present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from The Guardian, read by Charlotte Green.
No one who knows them doubts that the Thatchers have a deep and successful marriage, and that Sir Dennis has kept his end up, despite all the obvious complications.
Thanks to Victoria Britton of Paris for that. Now let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Francis Wheen and Jeremy Hardy. Challenging them, on my left, Alan Corran and Sandy Toksvig. Francis, who wouldn't give tuppence for an emu?
Well, perhaps this is the Conservative Party, or some members, the provisional wing of the Conservative Party, I think, has been issuing its own separate manifesto. And when various backbenchers did it, Major said, well, that's all right, they're only backbenchers. Ministers have to toe the line. And then various ministers started producing these manifestos. And he said, well, I think I'd better go on television and explain what's going on. So he gave an impromptu broadcast. And I watched it. It was most odd. The screen kept blacking out at the end of every sentence. And this was meant to restore confidence that he knew what he was doing. He said, I am the only person in this country who can negotiate on our behalf. I stand alone against continental Europe, which suggests that he's admitting that nobody in his party is supporting him. But anyway, yeah, he stands alone.
How many times has a Conservative politician ever said, please don't tie my hands?
especially in the same paragraph in which he said, please don't send me naked into the chamber.
Yes, the party whips were involved in that too. Yes, a figure approaching 200 Conservative MPs said they would never join a single European currency, whereas official party policy is to wait and see before taking the decision not to join a single European currency. Mr. Major is fighting a one-man campaign supported only by Norma, the sinking man's crumpet. Two points to Francis. Jeremy, who tried to sell a pup to the voters?
Is this the dog? Must be. Fitz the dog. I didn't actually see this particular thing, but seemingly he got a dog to symbolise Britain. He's playing this sort of patriotic charade out and singing Tomorrow Belongs to Me and stuff. And he got this dog on who seemingly perks up when he hears. He gets very excited and looks very happy, this dog, when he hears Tony Blair speak, which proves that dogs can hear things that humans can't. And Tony Blair's hidden agenda is, hey boy, walkies!
What do you think about the symbolism of these things? I mean, why don't they never have goldfish or budgerigars?
Well, that'd be sweet. I like that.
I think it'd be lovely if he had
closing
a party electoral broadcast
with
a bunch.
Did you see it? Yes. And then it came up with a thing saying, vote Labour. And there was a dog's bum, like a pencil sharpener. How very strange. What am I missing, I thought.
A goldfish would be rather better for the new Labour Party, wouldn't it? Do we believe in privatisation? I think so, can't remember. Think so, can't remember.
Sandy, who threw his towel into the Basildon ring?
Oh, yes, well, this is a very strange thing. There are different approaches in this election to if you've done something naughty or accused of doing something naughty. Certain political parties, if you've done something naughty or accused, alleged, let us be careful here, you say, yes, I did do it, and then you carry on and think it's going to help you get better elected. What the Liberal Democrats do is say, I didn't do it, but I'm going to resign anyway. Terry Marsh, who is an ex-boxer, was standing for Basildon Thurrock, has been accused of fraud and deception in obtaining a grant for further education. Now, he's resigned as a potential MP. I don't know much about boxing, and I'm sure it doesn't apply to Mr. Marsh, but you sort of have a suspicion if a boxer is applying for further education. We're talking about the alphabet here, and possibly one or two primary colours, but I can't think it's a lot of money. But perhaps there is a deeper story here, because the Liberal Democrats are saying they're going to put a penny on tax for education, and the sinister news is that it was all going to go to Terry Marsh. I don't know. Is that right? Is that thing?
Yes, absolutely. Terry Marsh stood down as Liberal Democrat candidate for Basildon. The former boxer was famously cleared of attempted murder and has now been charged with fraud. He said he would go now to avoid the deep embarrassment of becoming a Liberal candidate. Alan, listen to this.
The task of filling up the blanks I'd rather leave to you, but it really doesn't matter whom you put upon the list, for they none of them be missed. They none of them be missed.
You may put them on the list, you may put them on the list, and if none of them be missed, they'll none of them be missed.
Alan, who put black sheep on his white list?
This is the other party political broadcast of the week, isn't it? There were two great ones. There was one with Fitz the dog, who wasn't barking, and the next night there was one with Sir James Goldsmith, who clearly was. But it was even stranger than that, because I turned the television on to watch him, and there was this huge, domed, rather green head and these staring eyes, and I thought... Those in my generation remember Dan Dare. I thought, that's the Mekon. He wants to take Venus out of the European Union. He's come onto our television on behalf of the Treens to tell us so. Yes, I mean, it's old Jimmy the Grocer.
Can anyone tell me what the white list is?
It's the list of people they're not standing against, isn't it?
Exactly.
They've drawn up a list of MPs they think are OK, and they're not going to challenge, because they've been very serious and sober and responsible about this. They had a huge rally at Alexandra Palace, I think, last weekend, a rally at Ali Pally, and they were trying to disprove this terrible sneer in the press that they're full of rich eccentrics, because they've got some quite poor eccentrics. So they got David Bellamy, Edward Fox in The Day of the Jackal, that was already made his name, wasn't it?
When he
tried to assassinate Charles de Gaulle.
He was so Dave,
Dave the Jackal. Bit of a Eurosceptic. He was so Eurosceptic he had to assassinate the President of France. And he's now speaking at referendum party rallies. And then to round it all off, they had the man who presents One Man and His Dog on the telly, didn't they? Robin Page. And then Jimmy Goldsmith, minus his dog.
I thought David Bellamy was there to look at fascinating single-celled organisms.
2 points to Alan for getting it right, 1 point to Francis for getting it even more right. It was Sir James Goldsmith and his so-called white list of 93 candidates who won't be facing a challenge from the referendum party. It also launched an anthem this week in order to rally Eurosceptical support, but the plan looks set to backfire. The music is so terrible, it's being put forward as this year's Song for Europe. And the scores at the end of round one are Alan and Sandy 4 points, but Francis and Jeremy edging into the lead with 5. And we start round two with an item spotted in the Daily Mail.
The new portrait of Camilla Parker Bowles is by Sir Geoffrey Shackley, highly regarded for his 1986 photographic volume, The English Dog at Home.
Oh, mean. Oh, horrid. Nevertheless, thank you everyone who sent that in. Francis, who has become the Duchess of Grub Street?
Oh, I think it's Fergie.
It is.
I rather resent all this. She's writing a column for the New York Times, and it's being syndicated all over the world. And as a columnist myself, I slightly object to these people busting in these amateurs trying to move in on my livelihood. But they're all doing it. Do you see, last week, Prince Michael of Kent's been commissioned to make a TV documentary about Queen Victoria's love life, and Prince Edward this week has been commissioned to make one about Queen Victoria's love life or something of the sort, or Windsor Castle or one of these things. He did one last year, Edward on Edward. And they're all at it. And apart from that, they're all working.
It was never shown, was it?
Edward on Edward. Hmm. I think it was shown, but it's just nobody watched, so you wouldn't know. But they assured us it was shown, and it's going to be followed up by Andy on Andy, which is the Duke of York discussing music with Andrew Lloyd Webber, and then Queen on Queen, where Her Majesty presents her own tribute to the late Freddie Mercury. But anyway, Fergie, is now writing newspaper columns, and I mean, as a newspaper columnist, how would she like it if we people in the media started moving in on Buckingham Palace and behaving like members of the royal family, you know, going on holiday with our financial advisers and talking to the trees and so on? They wouldn't like it one little bit.
It's been coordinated by a writer for her. The thing is, she travels a lot, and those typewriters are so jolly heavy, aren't they? He's going to stay home by a phone with a typewriter, and she's going to phone it in, but she will be inputting a lot.
From distant beaches, I think.
Yes, I imagine. They don't have typewriters in Mystique, do they?
The first one was from Argentina, where she rang in from a beach somewhere and said, it's very nice here, thanks very much. And he got 700 words out of that, the poor old ghostwriter in New York.
I saw a Fergie's column. I thought, thank God, we're finally going to stick her up on a pillar and cover her in bird crap.
The Duchess only accepted the job after much thought. It's not the first time she slept on an American column. It's rumoured that she will receive £100,000 a year, though Fergie has said she doesn't expect to earn anything like that much. That's merely what she's being paid. Jeremy, where did firefighters fight without fire?
This was in Northamptonshire, I think. A fire crew was called, or were called, to a false alarm and got there and realised it was a false alarm. And then another crew arrived with their siren wailing. And the bloke from the first crew went over and said, no, it's a false alarm, you can turn the siren off. And there was a huge fight, which I'm surprised by, because I've always thought fire crews are probably quite sort of camp, Nelly people, because if you listen to those sirens, I mean, they used to be sort of like, ding-a-ling-a-ling, the plucker traps the fire brigade, do their best, or douse the flames, as Hitler's bombs rain down. But you listen to the sirens now, they're really camp. They go, woo! Look at the fire on that. Mind you, with those curtains, it's a blessing, I think.
Yes, it was the Northamptonshire town of Desborough where two rival fire crews arrived at the same time in response to a false alarm and started fighting with each other over the noise made by their sirens. The police arrived and, seeing a uniformed man lashing out with a hose pipe, described the scene as disgusting, since you should always wait till you're back in the privacy of a cell before you start using the hose pipe. Also this week, the fire service asked owners in rural areas to memorise their map references to make finding the house easier. Or you could just tell them your house is the brightly lit one under a big plume of smoke. Mrs. Danvers screaming at the window. Sandy, listen to this.
We gave her most of our lives.
Is leaving.
Sacrificed most of our lives.
Ah.
We gave her everything money could buy.
She's
It's a crummy question. Do you actually need it, Sandy?
The actual question? No, I think we're referring to the star of Sir Paul's Eye here, aren't we? Yes, this is very curious, and it just goes to show that you can come from nothing at all and make a big success in life. Stella McCartney, which has nothing to do with her parentage at all, she's the daughter of Sir Paul and Lady Linda McCartney, has, at the age of 25, and after her tutor at St. Martin's College of Art said, she didn't stand out, I don't remember her, she wasn't terribly good, become a leading designer for Karl Lagerfeld. And it's just, frankly, sheer talent and guts that's got her there. And I won't have anybody say any different.
Stella's name comes from the lager, in the great tradition of rock stars naming their children after their favourite tipple. You have to feel sorry for Keith Richards' kids, son Jack Daniels, daughter Spliff, and little Colombian grade A Jimmy. Alan, whose wimpy plan is considered less than full of taste?
I couldn't understand why it was wimpy. I couldn't understand what it was there at all for. It's this thing that's been built at the end of Prince Charles's garden at Highgrove. And it looks like Fergie's bungalow as well. I wonder whether they rather like those sort of pan-tiled things. But it's a conference centre. I don't know who confers in it. I mean, is it Charles and Diana who meet there regularly to talk about the alimony? Is it plants? Do cucumbers and Brussels sprouts range there and talk? But it's at the end of his yard, and a lot of architects are very upset that he's building it because they think it's a bit of an eyesore. They think what they said actually was the side wings stick out, and I didn't know whether they were talking about Charles or the bungalow, but it's a sort of central thing with two what's-its on either end. And it's horrible, I'm told.
It was bizarrely described as Charles needs it for his functions.
So at the end of round two, the scores are Alan and Sandy with 8, but Francis and Jeremy clinging to their lead with 9 points. A And we start round three with a letter from the Pool Daily Echo.
We're told that water levels in many reservoirs are dangerously low. I just cannot understand what all the fuss is about. Why not simply fill these reservoirs up from the mains?
You could buy some ice and melt it down, couldn't you?
Jeremy, listen to this.
Want to live forever?
Jeremy, how will 100 be a common denominator after 2,000?
They've done a survey again. For years, people have been saying there's too many old people in the country, and this is becoming a major problem, they say, and this is why pensions are going to be abolished. There's an excuse, is that there's too many old people, and this is going to cause not only major economic crisis, but geographical crisis as well, because as more and more of us are retired to the seaside, the edges of Britain will bend downwards, forcing the Midlands thousands of feet above sea level. But that will make Wolverhampton less accessible, which is a good thing. But they've done a survey saying that people with blue and green eyes, for some reason, are more likely to live until they're over 100. But I heard someone from the survey on the radio saying the trouble is, although all these people will be over 100, they won't be in very good condition because the problems of age will not have been conquered. So all these people, the Queen will be busily sending off all these telegrams to everybody, and there'll be all these people saying, Who's it from? No, she's dead. I saw the, no. I saw the carriage go past the house. No, who are you? Can we go for a walk later?
Apparently, pear-shaped women are going to live longer than apple-shaped women, which worries me enormously. I've got a body like a kiwi. Strangely not mentioned in the survey.
It's the news that Britain in the 21st century will be largely populated by centenarians. The whole country will drown in noise pollution from the clicking of plastic hips, though fortunately no-one will be able to hear it. In fact, it turns out that sex is already possible at 100, but it's best to keep at least one hand on the steering wheel. Sandy, what has sprung up an early surprise?
What has sprung up an early surprise? Well, spring is earlier than it should be. Is that as simple as that? Oh, dear, how very tiresome. Yes, apparently May now comes in April, which I think has been discovered by Cambridge Dons, who have May balls in June. As I seem to remember.
Have Mabel's what in June?
I'm not telling. But it's very unpleasant and happens on the banks of the river. And I don't know why this is. It's something to do with the sun now, nothing to do with global warming at all. But apparently we can expect May in April and Christmas in June. And best get your new diaries out now, I think. I don't know how it works, but that's what's happened, isn't it?
Bloody European Commission.
It is, yes. I blame the Danes myself.
Marvellous bacon, though.
Yes. Yes, they were lovely people, but God almighty, the weather.
They're friendly. They're friendly.
Thank you.
Is there a Danish news quiz, Sandy?
We don't have news. In fact, my favourite thing about it, when during the Gulf War, Margaret Thatcher called to question all the European foreign ministers for not doing enough, and the Danish Prime Minister got very upset about this, and he said, "How dare you say we're not doing enough? We have sent half our navy, and the other boat would have gone, but it was needed to... it was needed for repairs," and I think that's absolutely true. That's,
Alan, which book proved too spicy for young palates?
Yes, Mrs. W. H. Smith, that doughty campaigning publisher and distributor of everything except things which might not sell, and they were very worried that the Spice Girls have written a book. Helped by Fergie, no doubt. And W. H. Smith have decided that there's a lot of four-letter words in it and decided that children shouldn't have these. So they've withdrawn the book from sale, not to everyone, just to children under 12, something like that. The Spice Girls, I didn't know about them. They did a lot of things this week which seemed to me to be meaningless. They sang without miming. I didn't know that this mattered or was important news. And the whole of the Church of England was asked whether it had heard of them. And the Bishop of Rochester had heard of all five. Why was it news that the Bishop of Rochester knew the names of all five Spice Girls? And John the fact Major, that John Major sure knew them, only two.
And Blair knew three.
Blair knew three.
Tells you everything you need to know.
It is a major electoral platform, isn't it? I mean,
I suppose the relevance to the Church of England is that if a bishop knows the names of all five Spice Girls, it proves that at least one of them is heterosexual. Not the Spice Girls, one of the Church of England.
Yes, nobody's asked the Spice Girls if they can name the General Synod of the Church of England. Smiths have said the book should not be sold to children under 10 as it contains bad language. The grammar and the syntax are crap as well. And the scores at the end of round 3. Alan and Sandy, 12. But, and this is much more exciting than the general election, Francis and Jeremy clinging to the lead at 13 points. Before we start our final round, here's a story from the News of the World sent in by Frederick Dobinson of Blackpool.
A naked man stunned staff and customers by robbing a bank in Miami, Florida. A female cashier who got a good look was unable to describe his face.
Francis, listen to this.
Eat your minestrone, Joe.
That's all you ever sang.
Eat your macaroni, Joe.
Every blinking time.
No wonder you're so bony, Joe, and skinny as a rake.
Well, then give us a bash at the bangers and mash me mother used to make. Bangers and mash.
Minestrone.
Bangers and mash.
Macaroni.
Give us a bash at the bangers and mash me mother used to make.
Francis, what isn't at all like Mama used to make it?
I think this is another British academic. Almost every question on this programme these days is either about a survey or about an academic who's got on the gravy train. And this chap has been commissioned to eat a lot of pasta and investigate why it is that pasta goes all sticky when you boil it these days. I think this is right. It's not right. British scientist?
Is this the Durham Wars? The Durham Wheat Wars?
Yeah. Yes, well, that's what I was just saying.
That was 2 weeks ago. No, the one 2 weeks ago.
There have been two pasteurists. There was
a spaghetti man a couple of weeks ago who'd got an even better racket going. He'd been paid about 65,000 quid to just twirl spaghetti around his fork and see what happened. This one is...
I've spent 5 years.
This one is more of an Interpol character. He has been asked to look into the adulteration of Durham wheat. There's a world shortage of Durham wheat, 100% Durham wheat.
It comes from Durham.
Exactly. And so people are sort of throwing in bits of hair clipping and God knows what, naval fluff into the pasta mixes and sending it as bona fide genuine Italian macaroni and spaghetti and tagliatelle.
Well, that was a question about pasta, so we move on now. Jeremy, who is spreading the news about the spreadable?
This is, they're trying to alter cows to produce spreadable butter because the butter manufacturers are threatened by all these wonderful spreadable butter substitutes with names like Bugger Me, It's Marge. So they're going to start fiddling with what cows eat in order that they produce. And you would think that the farmers had learnt their lesson on fiddling with cattle feed. I mean, for years they've been feeding them diseased sheep's entrails, presumably so that they can produce yoghurt that tastes like haggis. You'd think that they would give them some bloody grass and leave them alone, wouldn't they?
Yes, indeed. It's the news that scientists at the Agricultural Development Advisory Service have found a way of making cows produce designer butter. Cows whose normal diet is supplemented by dairy products produce butter that can be spread straight from the fridge. Those fed with sunflower seeds produce flora, and if you give them strawberries and put them on a trampoline, you get a milkshake. Some scientists are worried about tampering with a cow's diet. They are by nature vegetarians, and as one cow said, I wouldn't be seen dead in a McDonald's. Alan, who was in someone else's home video?
A man called Christopher Wright.
Nearly.
I mean, really, an anorak man. I hope it's that one. The burglar turned up and stole his trowel and a hundredweight of Fison's. And this man saw him. And instead of going out and giving him a bloody good hiding, which you can't do now, he thought, at last I can use my £4,000 worth of video equipment, beloved. If you just care to hold the lights, and I'll take... And they went out in the garden and filmed this man. And the man smiled through his car window, gave him a V sign, and drove off. And the police said, this is enormously useful. They haven't found the bloke. The video. It's like anybody else's video. And he sort of waved and ran backwards.
It's going to put Crime Watch actors out of work, though, isn't it? People start doing their own reconstruction. Non-equity burglars.
Police have issued a description of the man on the video. He has half a head and a tree sticking out of his left ear. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is from the property pages of the Yorkshire Evening Post. Broomfield, Leeds 16, a three-bedroom semi-detached house, gas, central heating, dining, conservatory, kitchen, hob, oven, fridge, cloakroom, bathroom, WC, long garden, garage, corpse.
So why are you selling the property?
Jeremy.
This comes from a letter sent to the Sutton Guardian. I was rather annoyed to read your article, Driver Rows with Mum, in your March 27th issue. Michelle Walker was wrong to have brought that pram on the bus with the baby in it. The driver was right to have refused her entry because had her baby gone flying out of the pram, if the bus had lurched violently, he would have got it in the neck.
Sandy.
I'm rather pleased with myself because I've actually found this myself and it was in this week's Mirror. I was reading it and enjoying their Hunt the News Item competition and came across this, which is entitled Suicide, a Pushover. A wife has admitted murdering her husband because she was fed up with his constant suicide threats. She flipped when she found him balanced on the balcony rail of their eighth-floor flat in France. Instead of coaxing him in again, Lucette R, 39, pushed him into a car park below.
Alan.
Mine comes from the Exmouth Weekly News, Simon. And it says, 9 people were bitten by donkeys on Bridlington Sands during last season. 172 were stung by jellyfish. And another 13 were bitten by dogs. These were just a few of the 2,186 cases handled by first aid posts on the town beaches. Only one casualty required hospital treatment, a male tourist from Holland who had to have a stick of rock removed.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final scores, which are... Alan and Sandy, 16, but Francis and Jeremy, narrow winners with 17 points. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Brighton and Hove News, sent in by George Feltham of Brighton.
Councillors' diaries in the interwar years included details of the authorities' mental deficiency committee. New laws had given councils a greater role in looking after people with mental health problems. It included the mayor and 16 other councillors.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corrin, Francis Ween, Sandy Toksvig and Jeremy Hardy. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Ian Pattinson with Hugh Rycroft and David Spicer. The producer was Aled Evans.